You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barrett. I'm your host, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And again, boy, do I have a treat for you, because when you're looking at your dental practice, thinking about the future, what it could be, what it might be, where the opportunities exist, we've been talking about airway and sleep medicine, dental sleep medicine. And if you've been sleeping under a rock, you don't know that this is one of the most important conversations in all of dentistry. And I got my good friend, Dr. Mark Murphy here, and he is doing a phenomenal series on how this all works. Because here's the challenge. Everybody might know it's important. The question is always, how do I make this work? And Mark has done an incredible job of outlining it. So we are now in the episode today where we're going to be talking about billing and documentation, which is he's going to twist your mind today. I'm telling you, this is going to turn a lot of things on its head. So it's very important that you listen to this. And if you haven't listened to the prior episodes, you can just scroll up. So if you're on Spotify right now, just scroll up or down, whichever direction it goes. And you're going to see in the previous episodes, we talked about the treatment and the exam pieces. He also went back and talked about the testing, gave us some great framework for how to think about testing in your office. The screening one could have been one of my favorite, with your acronym and how you could easily put that into play in your office. And then prior to that, we went through basic sleep physiology. So make sure you check all of those episodes out. And with all the episodes, you're going to see the show notes are down there. Everything that Mark and I talk about, our writers put together with links, and you can click the links and email Mark directly, which I'm going to encourage you to do. And you just have to embrace this piece of dentistry. I think it's important. So Mark, today we're going to be talking about billing and documentation. Now, help me understand, or help us understand, we're going to bring it all together and tie it up in a bow today. So tell us what we're going to learn today and why it's so important.
Today, what we're going to learn is that we have to accept a behavioral change about what we think we need to do in our practice if we're going to do dental sleep medicine. By that, I mean, you have to outsource billing and documentation. Simple as that. And that's if there's a mind twist in this, the mind twist is you can't do all of this by yourself. It's just an insurmountable task. Now, that's a lie, because there are people who have overcome the obstacles to billing and documentation on their own. When I was billing with a third-party biller and doing our own documentation in Google Docs, I would get done with a half day's worth of patients and have an hour to an hour and a half's worth of paperwork to do. Now, whatever an hour or an hour and a half is worth to you, and whatever it's worth to me, write that down. When we finished using a third party as a documentation support software system, we use DS3, Dental Sleep Solutions software. It's owned by a guy named Guy Yatros, who I've taught with down at Panky. He teaches the sleep course down there. He's a brilliant guy, great guy. But I'll talk about some other ones. Nearman Dental Writer is out there. Imagine Software, lots of good stuff. I would not spend 3 minutes at the end of my last patient finishing my documentation for the day, because there's a checklist, there's punching buttons, everything gets done automatically. Similarly, on the billing side, I've never tried to build my own. But when I've talked to people who said, well, I've tried sleep medicine, but I just quit. I said, why'd you quit? The number one answer is I couldn't get paid. I said, why couldn't you get paid? Well, we tried the building. Did you try to do it yourself? Yes. I go, that might be the problem. And the problem is if you try to do it yourself, you will, A, frustrate the hell out of your staff because you're asking them to do something that is completely different than dentistry.
I don't have stuff to do up front. Like I'm finding myself, I work in a dental office and I'm like,
amen.
All is free amen. Time. So I'm, you know.
And you're overpaid already. So you're happy to take on more stuff.
Which has never been said by anyone. So that is a natural challenge in this. Now, wait, I got to ask you, let me go back to that. Okay. Really explain what outsourcing means. And then Mark, one of the questions I have, okay, I have Dentrix or I have Open Dental. What are you talking about here? And help me understand, do they work together? Do they integrate? Like, and what do you mean by outsourcing? Like, how does that work a little bit more?
Yeah. Give me 100 people with Dentrix or Eaglesoft. And we'll get them all to try and do dental sleep medicine documentation themselves. And there'll be 3 or 4 or 5 who survive. 90 to 95% will quit doing dental sleep because of the documentation. So when I say outsource it, what I mean is write a check and pay someone else. That's what I mean by outsourcing. I outsource my lawn care. I outsource my snow removal. I outsource so many different things in my life. With COVID, I've been around the house so much, I kind of feel stupid. When I'm sitting at home, very fit and capable, and the guy comes to shovel my snow or cut my lawn, I'm like, where do I hide? Because I could be doing that, but they need the money too. And my wife just says, well, shut up and let them do that and write the check. You know, it's $50 every time I get my snow shoveled, and I don't know what it is every time I get my grass cut. I have no idea.
Mark, I shoveled my own driveway, and I had chest pain, and I started feeling lightheaded. So it was bigger than the dollar amount. It was like, I shouldn't be doing this. You know what I mean? Type of
right.
Things. I'm totally
now. If you love doing that, and it's therapeutic, and you love doing it, like gardening or something, then that's great. Then by all means, if you say, you know, the hour I spend cutting my lawn every week is like just a Zen meditation, then knock yourself out and do it. Absolutely. So let me tell you, you're not going to feel that way about documentation and billing. Documentation and billing will be the two biggest thorns in your, right in your ass. They won't be in your side. They'll be right up your butt.
And I have
to try to do that yourself.
I have another big can of worms we're going to open up, which is help me dispel some of the myths before we go down this path of medical insurance. Because I've heard you talk about medical insurance. No. Like I'm already trying to get away from PPOs. Medical insurance is worse than PPOs. Like, why are you introducing this when I'm trying to create a fee for service? Help me dispel the rumors that are in my head.
So, when I was a dentist practicing dentistry in 1991, I went non-par and practiced the rest of my career without ever participating with a single insurance company. The guy that graduated in 1996 that bought my practice in 1998 for me has never participated with any dental insurance company, rather indemnity, PPO, nothing. It's all fee for service where we fill out the paperwork and send it in. So we are a non-par practice. I can charge a fair fee, collect a fair fee, and the check goes to the patient. I come to medicine and my referring physicians want me to be in network. That's what they call it. I get paid very well in network. It's not like dentistry. It's not, it might be called a PPO, but because it's real insurance, now listen to me, it might be a PPO. I might have Blue Cross PPO patient in front of me, but I get paid a fair fee with a PPO. What? How can that be? Because it's real insurance. You see, in dentistry, we don't have real insurance. In dentistry, we call it insurance, but it's not. It's a maintenance plan. Okay. Glad you have it. It's a great way to reduce your out-of-pocket expense for things that you need all the time. It's a fantastic benefit plan, but it's not insurance. When you look at the word insurance in the dictionary, it says when a third party takes the risk for a catastrophic loss, there's nothing catastrophic about $1,200 or $1,500. Most of your medical insurance plans have a deductible that's larger than all of the dental insurance coverage a patient has. So let's get this whole idea of why is it different than dental insurance? Because dental insurance ain't insurance. Dental insurance is a first dollar maintenance plan. It stops at $1,200. If you need a catastrophic coverage like oral appliance therapy or CPAP or Inspire surgery or knee surgery, and you're going to spend $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000, they're out. So if you had that kind of car insurance and you totaled your car and you went down and you talked to the little Geico and he said, no worries, mate, you've got Geico insurance. You're talking to the little gecko guy. And you said, well, I totaled my car. And he says, here's your check for $1,200. You'd go, where's the rest of my money? He goes, that's all we cover. Good day. Cheerio, mate. You choke that little booger till his eyes fall out, right? See, if your car insurance covered oil changes, lube jobs and filters, new wiper blades, new tires every few years, you'd say that doesn't sound like an insurance plan. That sounds like a maintenance plan. So forget those two things, dentistry, not insurance, medical, insurance. And they actually pay for stuff after the deductible and the co-payments, they pay really well. So for an oral appliance, you know, it's regional. Every part of the country is different. So I can only talk about my area in the Midwest, but we average about $2,200. We get $2,456 from Blue Cross. We average about $2,200 a case. I know people that average more. I know people that average less, but just say it's a couple grand and say it takes you a couple of hours. So the compensation from an in-network PPO insurance is way better than anything you've ever seen in dentistry. So that's why we can talk about being in-network. Are there people that aren't in-network? Yep, one of my best friends here in Rochester Hills, Michigan. Practices right down the street from me. He does sleep. He's got an office that's just sleep and then a general dental office. Great office, great guy. We're good friends. It's a blue ocean. We can both practice next to each other and be competitors at the same time. Yeah, no problem. And he's fee for service only with medical insurance. He doesn't hassle with insurance at all. And he charges a little higher fee and he gets it.
Awesome.
But he doesn't get it as often as I get it. I see a lot more patients per event. And I get to be a little bit more successful doing dental sleep than he does. It's okay. There's more than one way to skin this cat. You could still decide to be non-par and do the medical thing, but I think you'll struggle to be successful and you'll struggle to work with physicians. So being in participating, being in network with medical insurance is not the same as being in a PPO with dentistry. That sucks. But in medicine, it's fine. You get good compensation.
Okay, so again, I've got my play along card here and I'm a dentist and I've been listening to the episode on sleep physiology. I loved what you said in screening. I listened to the testing one. I went through the treating one and I'm at home playing along on my card. I'm creating my checklist. And so Mark—
Is it like a bingo card and you're checking off things?
It is. It's, you know, it's like, I'm creating my own list here now. So Mark, what do I need to know top to bottom on billing and documentation to get this rolling? Like walk me through my steps.
So if you've listened to all the other segments that we've recorded in these podcasts, then maybe, like we ask our patients, you've come up this learning ladder with me and you've gone from unaware to aware to interested in this topic, and maybe you've begun to trust me. If you've begun to trust me and you're saying to me, like you're saying to me right now, what do I need to do? We can make this the shortest podcast in history, because I would say, go pick and hire a billing company, go pick and hire a software company, drop the mic, we're done. If you want to go get some more education, I can tell you where to go. You know, if you want to join some organizations to be part of it, I can tell you what to do. I can tell you that you probably should participate with Medicare, but don't take their reimbursement model. That way you can do what's called balance billing for these people, because most of my patients have Medicare. The patients that are over 65, that's about 20% of my practice is Medicare. And they have Medicare, but they always have these supplemental insurance policies. So they pay like regular insurance. It isn't like just $1,300 for that patient, which is what Medicare would cover in my district. It's the country is divided into four or five zones. So just go sign up with a company for billing, sign up with a company for software, you know, interview two or three, pick the one you want. We chose DS3, Dental Sleep Solutions. I've worked with people from Nearman Dental Writer. That's another good software product. There's probably a couple more. Those are probably the two big ones. From a billing company standpoint, there's a company out there. We use Four Pillars Billing, which is part of Dedic, which is part of Dental Sleep Solutions. There's also Pristine. There's also Dental Writers from Nearman. They have their own billing company as well. There's a company called Dedicated Sleep that does, they actually have the testing and telemedicine visits with physicians. They have the billing component and they have the software all wrapped up into one kind of component. It's really kind of a neat system. The Dedicated Sleep is probably for a dentist who's a little bit more savvy and doing a little bit more sleep, probably not for the beginner. But we've got DS3 software, Four Pillars Billing. We live happily ever after. I probably pay $300 a month for my software. I probably pay $49 a claim and 8% for my claims. That is a cost of doing business. That is a cost of not having to spend an hour and a half at the end of my day or not having to upset my team by trying to get them to do something that they're not capable of doing.
Right. Now, I've heard this from other people. One of the things you don't understand about that kind of billing is the amount of follow-up that's required, because you don't just send things and they go, oh, here it is. Like, that's what a company like this does. They become persistent to get it.
Yeah.
Right.
You're right. when a dental insurance asks for follow-up, they're asking for a radiograph that you didn't send. That's easy. You put it in an envelope or you fax it off to them, or you send it and attach it to an email. When a medical insurance company asks for follow-up, they want a copy of your soap notes. And your soap notes come out of your software, and they better be written the right way, and they better include the six things that they're looking for. How do you make sure they do that? The software is designed to communicate with insurance companies, so it always makes sure that you tick off these six boxes so that that right information goes sent off to the insurance company. Still, there will be the once in a while, but very rarely will you have to get on a phone with a claims physician or a claims doctor who's looking at a case of yours. I just had one. I probably have, honestly, one. Now, I only work one day a week doing sleep, so it's not like it's full time for me. I probably have one, maybe two a year. But it's the same guy this time that I had last year. And it was interesting because he said, don't you remember this type of insurance and the restriction they had on this and that and this and that? I go, yeah, I kind of do. I remember talking to you about that. He said, well, this is the same thing again. So it was just a case where the patient has sleep apnea. The patient needs treatment. He would tell you the same thing. But the insurance coverage that they've purchased individually does not cover it unless they have this, this, and this on top of sleep apnea, which they didn't have. Very rare to have that restrictive of policy. So that was a very unusual event. If that happens one out of 100 times, who cares?
Right.
But I don't want that happening 30 out of 100 times.
Right.
And so the third-party billing companies, they know what to ask for. They know what to answer. They know what to tell the insurance companies, and they get you paid. I cannot imagine trying to do that on my own. And I'll give you one more thing. I can't imagine trying to do it on my own. And my daughter, who runs all of my sleep practice, and she runs a lot of my lecturing, teaching life as well. She does a lot of cool stuff for me. She's really capable. She also works 2 days a week for a medical billing company, and she would not want to do our own medical billing. Even with her knowledge of how to do it, having the systems in place to do it, she's like, uh-uh, we're paying this. And so if you've got a $2,500 case that you do and you've got to pay 8%, that's $100. That's $200. And then you got to pay $49. So at the end of the day, it's about 10% of that claim, and you've still got $2,250 to start with. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Good with that. Love it. Love it. Now today, go back to this. Today we're talking about billing and documentation. Go a little bit deeper on documentation. So we talked about the billing. What do I need to know about documentation? Talk about soap notes. Like what is important for me to know on that side of things?
Yesterday, we wrote MO number 5, shade 8.35, composite, 1.8 cc's of xylocaine, patient tolerated procedure well. We did a filling. Okay. Now you're going to write a page. Now you don't write a page. You check boxes on little parts of the software that guide you through the process of writing the paragraphs, and the paragraph format for every single one of your medical visits for dental sleep are going to be subjective, objective, assessment, and plan. It's called a soap note. It's what medicine lives in. I said flippantly earlier without explaining, the medical insurance company will ask for a copy of your soap notes for those procedures. And they're going to come out of your medically signed software. And the soap note format and the templates for those are all set up, and you simply input, or your assistant inputs, the 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 parameters that are different for this patient as opposed to the last patient, and it populates the entire thing. I walk out of the patient visit. She's going to dismiss the patient. I go in the back. I flip open my laptop. There's an alert sticking up that says, you have one soap note waiting to be signed. I open the soap note. I read it. 7 times out of 10, I press sign and save. Once in a while, I'll say, oh, this 50-year-old male, Kirk Barrett, presented, referred by such and such. And then I go, oh, and we talked about something or another, and I'll add a little personal comment there, or I'll change a little note of something that she might have had. If it takes me 12 or 15 seconds, it doesn't take me 30 seconds. If it does take me 30 seconds, so be it, but it doesn't. Then I press sign, save. And now I've got this narrative that looks like I wrote 4 or 5 paragraphs about my visit with Kirk Barron, taking impressions and everything we talked about and did. And then when the insurance company says, well, I need this information, we go over here and we say medical inquiry for this. You press a button. It pulls data from the software, from his exam. It pulls SOAP notes. It puts them together now into a two-page document that it sends off to the insurance company for you automatically. If you had to do that every time you had an inquiry, you would kill yourself. You would definitely not do dental sleep medicine. You would say it's too hard. It's not worth it. You have to have a software platform partner or incredibly thick skin about wanting to do that kind of stuff. And you have to have a billing partner, or you have to have an incredibly tenacious staff. I have met practices who do their own billing. Okay. And the person who does dental billing, does medical billing, and they have figured it out and they're good at it. They have a lot of headaches with it, but they get it done. And so that's okay. That's okay. That's a unique kind of individual. And if you have that person and they want to do that, knock yourself out. Let them go. Absolutely. But 19 times out of 20, 39 times out of 40, maybe 97 times out of 100, you will quit doing dental sleep medicine before you'll figure it out.
Right.
Now this, so you just have to check those two boxes.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
We could go off the rails on this one, but we used to joke years ago that dental insurance companies, I won't even call them dental insurance companies now because of what you shared, you know, they made money by not paying. So it was interesting that we would send all these things through the mail and they, you know, a large percentage of them would never make it. And we would joke that there was somebody in the room that every 10 pieces of mail, they just took two of them and threw in the trash. Do you know what I mean? Type of thing. And the reason I say that is that, like, the defense, like, they're playing incredible defense on that side. And so if you're a dentist, you're thinking, I can outsmart a billion-dollar company. No, no, no. I think the fence that they're going to create that you're going to have to jump over is going to get higher and higher and higher.
Higher and higher and higher.
And it's just too high of a fence and too much energy. And these guys know exactly what they're doing. They deal with it every single day. They know it's shared agreement, you know, all those things, weird things that keep popping up in dentistry. I'm like, I didn't know what a shared agreement is. I know what it is now. And now I know like all these other things. So we don't need to go down those roads. But I guess the important thing is what you're describing is you're saving time. You're making it easy. It's a button that I press. You know, these are
saving time, and time is money. Now it gets even worse with Medicare. The rules and regs and the hoops you have to jump through for Medicare are even more stringent. Plus, it's hard to get your facility approved to be a durable medical equipment supplier location for Medicare. That's what we are. As dentists doing dental sleep medicine, I give a patient an appliance, and the appliance I give them is a piece of what we call durable medical equipment. With Medicare, there's only certain devices that you can use. It's kind of weird. It's archaic. It's dumb, but it's their rules. And they have an unusual set of rules and regulations around which you have to operate. And they do site inspections, and you need to register with them separately from everything else. And it's a huge hassle. Why do I do that then? Well, I do that for two reasons. One, 20% of my population around me, 20% of my patients are Medicare patients. The second and probably more important reason that I'm going to tell you is most of the physicians that I have around me that would refer to me, they ask you two questions when you meet with them. Are you in network with the major carriers? And are you a Medicare provider? Those are the two things they want to know, because they are, and they want you to be. So the reason that I chose to be in network was I could get easier reimbursement, okay? And the reimbursement is excellent. It's not like dental insurance. The reason I chose Medicare was because my physicians would prefer that I was a Medicare provider. I thought I'd have to write off more on those claims because their fee schedule is so low. And I was prepared to do that as just a mix of services thing and do my math on my blended average fee that I collected. Well, as it turns out, most patients in an area like me, I'm in a nice northern bedroom community suburb of the Detroit, Michigan area, and people have money out here. And I don't think I've seen one patient who had Medicare and not have the supplemental insurances that are available. Everybody lives in nice houses out here. And so those patients come in and they have Medicare, but they also have a supplemental plan. And so we get paid a little bit less, sometimes more, but usually a little bit less than what we get from our traditional insurance plans, but it's pretty close. It's close enough for horseshoes and hand grenades. Good enough for me. So Medicare's got its own unusual sets of rules. You just got to abide by them.
This is awesome, buddy. I appreciate this so much because, again, you're changing the way we think and rethink how this fits into the practice, how it fits into our standard of cares, future growth, and you're decoding all of this. Any last thoughts? I have one more question after this one, but any last thoughts on billing and documentation that you want to share to wrap this up?
So the billing and documentation part, I always say are the biggest barriers to success in dental sleep medicine. What I probably should say is they're the biggest barriers if you try to do them yourself. Quite honestly, there's an incredible peace of mind to saying, that is not my concern. They've got to figure that out. And they do. These people are professionals and they do figure it out. And so when I do often say that that's the biggest barrier, but it's only the biggest barrier if you try to do it yourself. We do not see either one of those as a big barrier. We see them as very, very simple parts of what we do. Our biggest challenge that we're left with is how do we get more of the right kinds of patients we want to see either from physicians or from other referring dentists? So just like we all would in our practice, how do I get more patients? That's the question we're left with because everything else is pretty well handled. Now, we still have to talk about where do you get an education? We still have to talk about what kind of associations do you join? That's not really billing and documentation, but it's kind of like checking some boxes. You want to be a member of the American Dental Association if you're a dentist. You want to belong to your local society if you're a dentist, of course. And it's the same thing in dental sleep medicine. There are lots of really good organizations and places you can get good education. This podcast, for example, does not qualify you to do dental sleep medicine. You need a little bit more training.
No, I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night. I know how to do this.
You're good. You're good.
Okay, you're so good. I lied. I don't have three questions. I've got three of them. I want you to talk about the future of dental sleep medicine. Like, how important and what's this going to look like in the future? Answer that question. Where do I go for advanced education? And then let's wrap it up with the associations. What? Give us some thoughts on those three things.
Okay. So the future is so bright that you should put on shades. If you think about it, dental sleep medicine with no other influences is growing at about 12 to 15% compound annual growth rate. That's huge. 12 to 15% compound annual growth rate. And it's been doing that for some time. The number of people that have obstructive sleep apnea in our population is growing faster than the number of people we're treating. When we look at the population, if you remember back from our first session, 20 to 25% of the adult population has obstructive sleep apnea. 80 to 90% of them have not been treated. That's incredible. So in an average 2,000 person practice, there's 500 patients with sleep apnea, 400 that haven't been treated. 400 of them maybe would say, or half of them, 200 of them would maybe need an oral appliance. If you did one a week, that'd take you 4 years to work through those patients. So there's an incredible opportunity in front of us, and it's growing already. Plus, today, sleep physicians are writing $4.5 billion worth of prescriptions for CPAP machines, and roughly the cost of therapy is about the same as oral appliance therapy. And we're doing a few hundred million in oral appliance therapy. A 10% shift, if we earn their trust by using better devices, doing better documentation and communication, following the protocols, if we earn their trust and they shift just 10% of their prescribing patterns, it would triple or quadruple the market for oral appliance therapy overnight. It gets even better. There's 180,000 dentists, 150,000 GPs ballpark. Maybe 6,000 dentists are doing dental sleep medicine. That's 4%. 4%. So four out of every 100 dentists is making oral appliances for dental sleep medicine. So there's an incredibly large population of patients in need, and it's growing. And the number that get prescriptions for oral appliances could triple or quadruple with good behavior on our part. And there's hardly anybody doing it. So if you decide to cross that chasm and step into the arena to do some dental sleep medicine, it's a pretty easy downhill path. Oh, provided you put a billing partner on one side, provided you put a documentation partner on the other side, the growth phenomenal is incredible. And then the rewards to you and your team and your patients, both behaviorally and emotionally, as well as financially, are incredible. The upside, incredible.
You're not fixing teeth, you're changing lives or saving lives. Love it.
Advanced education, your second question. I would say that today there's a group called the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine, AADSM. That's kind of de facto the parent body. They've got about 4,000 members. They've got about 600 or 700 diplomates. I'm a diplomate. I'm board certified in sleep medicine, dental sleep medicine. They've got about 900 what are called qualified dentists. So they have an educational program that you can go through where when you do a certain level of education with them, you become a qualified dentist. If you do some more and you pass the tests, you become a diplomate. I would recommend that somebody join the AADSM and at least get qualified status. The American Sleep and Breathing Academy, ASBA, another great group. I'll be speaking for them as well later this year. I'm a member of that as well. They have a diplomate course, but they probably only have 500 or 600 members. So the AADSM is kind of like the American Academy of Periodontology, the American Academy of Orthodontics. They're kind of like the parent body for sleep. They've kind of taken on that role. I'm also a member of the American Academy of Physiology and Medicine and Dentistry, the AAPMD, where you talk more about myofunctional therapy, breathing techniques, a lot of interesting adjunct perimeter kind of entities that affect dental sleep medicine. It's a fascinating group to belong to, heart rate variability, all kinds of really cool stuff. But I wouldn't say it's core on just sleep medicine. It's not. It's broader than that. I belong to two physicians groups as well. I belong to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, and I'm presenting an abstract at their meeting this year. So that's kind of cool. That's all the sleep physicians who are generally, if you recall, pulmonologists, neurologists, and ENTs. And then I belong to the American Academy of Cardiovascular Medicine. Cardiologists have begun. They're not sleep physicians, but they've begun to have a keen interest in sleep. And so they formed their own group, and I'm a member of that. I'm presenting at their meeting later this year. And they're a kind of cool group because they realize, remember that SAVE trial we talked about a couple of episodes ago and how patients being treated with CPAP didn't do any better than patients with no treatment at all. They recognize that reducing cardiovascular incidence in a population requires more innovative thinking. And so they're looking more fortuitously at things like oral appliance therapy. So those are the groups that come up. There's a couple of others out there. I'm sure there's orofacial pain, craniofacial pain. They also have dimensions. Clinical disordered dentistry has another dimension that has a segment that's on oral appliance therapy. All good organizations, but for sure, AADSM, I would check that box. I would join that organization, send them a check, and I would go become a qualified dentist. Lots of other good places to get education. The Penke Institute has one of the best courses. Steve Carstensen, a dear friend of mine, you know Steve. He teaches that course. Gaietros teaches it. John Remmers, Barry Raphael is down there to talk about ortho. It's an incredible, incredible group of faculty. Very intense course. Maybe the best course that's out there, you know, 5 days long. We're holding that again in the fall. Some virtual, some in person. I'll be in person for that one, which would be kind of nice because the last couple we did virtually. I teach all the Army courses as well. But that Panky course doesn't count towards your qualification or your diplomate status. So there's a couple of programs that do. There's a mini residency at North Carolina, a mini residency at Tufts, a mini residency, I think, at the University of Pacific, Gene Santucci runs. So there's a few of those programs. So I would probably focus my first part of my education on getting a start with sleep education that would get me that qualification status. And then after that, branch out to whatever else you wanted. And then your final question, what associations should you join? I think we answered those with the educational formats. All those organizations have education, but you kind of have to join the AADSM. You kind of have to. Whether you want to join additional organizations, you know, that's another $300 or $400 or $500 a year. I don't know what it costs. That's up to you how many organizations you want to belong to. I've really been trying to trim that down. And in saying that, just joined another one, the American Academy of Cardiovascular Medicine. They asked me to present at the meeting. I thought the least I could do is be a member, and they do accept dentists. It's interesting. I went last year, just before COVID hit, I was at the AASM meeting, and there were 3 dentists out of about 1,000 or 1,200 attendees at the meeting down in Tampa, Florida. 3 dentists. One was presenting. I was there, and one other dentist that I ran into. There might have been a couple more wandering around, but I didn't see them. 3 dentists. And so if we want to change physicians' perceptions of who we are and what we do, we need to kind of go in their camp and show them what our game is like. So Amen. That's what I would do.
I love it. I love it. So, you know, like Marcus taught us all along, you're going to learn how to swim. You got to jump in the pool, just get swimming, get started, get involved with those organizations. I am going to encourage you to go back and listen to every one of the shows that Mark so graciously put together for us and created this framework. I'll attach all the show notes to each of the episodes. You guys can click down there, reach out to Mark and his great company. Even if you have a question, Mark's a great one to talk to. He will help you. He does it every day. He's talking to dentists and help them make this happen in their practice. And, Mark, I'm just grateful, man. I'm grateful for your friendship, your mentorship. I love what you do for dentistry. It started for me a long time ago. I met you the first time, then you dragged me through the Panky and suit, made me sleep on the couch in the condos, and it's been a great run ever since, brother. I'm just super grateful. So,
hey, I offered a spoon with you, and you said no. No way, you're not spooning. I'll take the couch.
I love you, but, you know, I don't know.
There's a limit. There's a limit.
There's Liv. Buddy, I'm so grateful.
Kirk, you've been such a positive influence out there. I want to thank you for giving us the time to talk about dental sleep medicine. You know, when you think about what you do and how you educate your doctors, your members, your community, if you will, your tribe, it's great to add this dimension to it. And I know you've had other people on that do dental sleep medicine, but for you and I to invest the time, effort, and energy into putting together this kind of logical sequence of telling the whole story, you and I both felt it was very important that we could paint that big picture so that a dentist could sit back, look at it in total, and make a decision where they wanted to play or whether they didn't want to play. So thank you for taking the time, effort, and energy to bring that all together. So you're a good man.
Amen. Amen. It is my pleasure, brother. And it is truly some of the best practices from the best practices, creating better practice, better life, and you're changing lives in the whole process. And that's what this great industry is all about. So if you guys enjoyed today, which I know you did, just do us a favor, hit the share button, share this with your friends, share it with your colleagues, help them improve their practices, help them improve the lives of their patients, and have a whole lot more fun doing it. Reach out to Mark. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. Until we see you next time, keep watching Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.